Welcome back to Listen to Your Heart. I'm Jerry.
And I'm Jerry's Heart.
Today's topic, Repatha, Evolokimab. Heart, why'd you pick this one?
Well, Jerry, for people who have had a heart attack, like us, diet and exercise might not be enough to lower the risk of another one.
Okay.
To help know if we're at risk, we should be getting our LDL-C, our bad cholesterol, checked, and talking to our doctor.
I'm listening.
And if it's still too high, Repatha can be added to a statin to lower our LDL-C and our heart attack risk.
Guess it's time to ask about Repatha.
Do not take Repatha if you're allergic to it. Serious allergic reactions can occur. Get medical help right away if you have trouble breathing or swallowing, swelling of the face, lips, tongue, throat, or arms. Common side effects include runny nose, sore throat, common cold symptoms, flu or flu-like symptoms, back pain, high blood sugar, and redness, pain, or bruising at the injection site.
Listen to your heart.
Ask your doctor about Repatha. Learn more at Repatha.com or call 1-844-REPATHA.
I'm Cindy Lauper with fellow Cosentyx advocate, Chef Michelle Bernstein.
We'll share our experiences with plaque psoriasis, with psoriatic arthritis, and Dr. Panico will talk about the possible connection.
Cosentyx secukinumab is prescribed for adults with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis 300 milligram dose and adults with active psoriatic arthritis 150 milligram dose. Don't use if you're allergic to Cosentyx. Before starting, get checked for tuberculosis. An increased risk of infections and lowered ability to fight them may occur, like tuberculosis or other serious bacterial, fungal, or viral infections. Some are fatal. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms like fevers, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, had a vaccine or plan to, or if inflammatory bowel disease symptoms develop or worsen. Serious allergic reactions and severe eczema-like skin reactions may occur.
Learn more at 1-844-COSENTYX or cosentyx.com/Cindy.
Off the ball, GAA.
Somebody's going to win and somebody unfortunately is not going to win. And we had a lot of days against Armagh. They're very, very special.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The Racing Pod
on Off the Ball
with William Hill. Who you got? 18 plus. See gamblingcare.ie.
And you're welcome to episode 76 of the Racing Pod and Off the Ball with John Duggan and Johnny Ward. Remember, we're here every week with analysis, race previews, tips, stories, interviews, bit of crack as well. The first half of the pod each week, free to air. The second part exclusively for members. So be sure to sign up by going to offtheball.com/join. And this week for members, we're going to focus on the flat horses that have been, I suppose, making waves in the trials. We'll also get Johnny's Charity Bash. We got the Derby and the Oaks coming up shortly, both at Epsom and obviously the Curra as well. Johnny, how is the form?
Very well, JD. Enjoying the good weather.
Fantastic weather, fantastic racing recently. And I suppose the story is not related to anything that we've seen on the track. It's more about Rachel Blackmore. I mean, what can you say? And this week, the Tipperary jockey announcing she was hanging up the saddle, retiring as a professional jumps jockey, 35 years of age, 14 years after riding Stowaway Pearl for Shark Hanlon to win her first race, won the conditionals jockey's title then when she was 27 after turning pro. And I think the association with Henry de Bramhead that brought her into the stratosphere, Johnny, and to effectively, a bit like Rory McIlroy, complete racing, the Champion Hurdle, the Champion Chase, the Stairs Hurdle, the Gold Cup, the Grand National. And what a trailblazer, not only for her sport, for sport in general.
Yeah, well said, JD. She was 10 years as a pro. I think as Paul Townend said on Racing TV the other night, she was late into the game. Like 10 years as a pro is not much at all, really. And she didn't retire. She didn't retire young or old. She retired sort of probably on the younger side of things as a national hunt jockey. But I feel a lot of national hunt riders go on too long. I think you can get away with it on the flat, but national hunt riders, it takes its toll in the end. And I think there's an element of, if you're getting out in one piece, and I mean that, do it. And Rachel is very unusual in the sense of being such a recognisable jockey that she should have a fine career regardless of what she does now because of her brand and what she has achieved as a rider, but what she achieved in a male dominated sport. But it was 10 years ago in March when she turned pro, and I vividly remember talking to somebody about it at one of the meetings. I was probably a regular on the circuit in those days. And this fella said to me, you know, this is kind of mad, like, because, and it was, I probably agreed. I was like, this is, Rachel was an amateur who was getting the odd winner, but very few opportunities. And Shark Hanlon kind of said to her, I think, sure, I'll support you, you know. And at that stage, you kind of, it's a bit like Tiernan Power Roach did it recently and ended up being champion conditional. You want to get at least rides that have chances, and you want to get a relative bit of loyalty from a trainer. And Rachel reasoned that she'd be able to do low weights and she'd be able to pick up rides in pick up spares, pick up more opportunities than she was getting as an amateur. And I can't remember exactly what I was saying at the time, but when you think about it in hindsight, she wasn't really going to get anywhere as an amateur, so she didn't have that much to lose. But if you were to say to me that Rachel Blackmore would become one of the biggest jockeys in Ireland at that stage, and it's nothing to do with her gender, it was just that the odds were so firmly against her. Sorry, it was to do with her gender, but it was more to do with the fact that it's such a closed shop, the National Hunt Game. You don't have opportunities. It's really, really hard to break in. Really hard to break in. And she was a relative nobody. She'd done okay in points and won a few amateur races, but she had come from relatively nowhere. And I spoke to Shark Hannon this week for a piece I did. I did a piece in The Currency, and I'm doing a piece in The Currency, and I did a piece in The 42 if you want to read that. But Shark was on about how brave she was, and he was actually almost afraid of giving her rides in point to points because she kind of just ride anything. And the likes of us who don't ride horses, you've no idea how brave you have to be, particularly riding dodgy jumpers and no-hopers in races and stuff like that. And Shark was of the point that she would ride basically anything because she was that brave and hungry. And then all of a sudden, she racked up she became a professional, a conditional, and she was racking up decent enough percentages. And then one day, I think Henry de Bromhead is on the way back from Aintree, or going to Aintree, I think he's come back from Aintree, and he's talking to Eddie O'Leary. And Eddie O'Leary says, in relation to his need for a jockey, what about Rachel Blackmore? And when you have to, a couple of things came to my mind about this. Kieran Schumacher essentially lost the job with John Gosden because of his ride in the Guineas and Field of Gold. Simple as that. Now, it could have been a totten up procedure in the mind of Gosden, but Gosden said it's directly related to the ride. Rachel Blackmore rode an awful lot of high profile horses, and to be endorsed by Eddie O'Leary, given Eddie and Michael's ruthless nature with jockeys and trainers, was quite something. And if I were to sum up Rachel in terms of, notwithstanding what she did in terms of being a woman in a male-dominated sport at that level, you asked me to pick out her three best rides. There aren't a million like, oh my god, that was an amazing ride from Rachel Blackmore in my head. Well, and I've said this before, I'm not an authority on jockeys or good jockeys or bad jockeys. I watch them, but I'm not a jockey, and I do feel you kind of need to have ridden to really appreciate what it's like to be a jockey. And when you see Ruby Walsh talk about the nuances of rides on TV, and you look like you're looking at an alien, that means that it's different if you ride a horse. So what I say is neither here nor there to an extent. But I don't have these a million Rachel Blackmore amazing rides in my head. What I really don't have, though, is mistakes. She really didn't make mistakes at the top level. She rode for Henry de Bromhead, whose horses had a very specific way of being ridden, which was primarily, apart from Bob Olinger, who we'll get to, up with the pace. They jumped, they knew their job, and she knew them. And you cut out all the kind of, a lot of the variables. And she was extremely, extremely professional, very good with owners. And she went from absolute obscurity to being by far the most recognised jockey in Ireland, by far. And lastly, just on her from this kind of rant here, she really rescued racing at a time when you had the Dead Horse Gate, and you had all these scandals and everything, and even Cheltenham during COVID, the negative publicity around that when we were there.
Tell us about it.
2020. Rachel then being the top rider at Cheltenham, winning the Gold Cup, winning the Grand National. She was in front of the papers. And with respect to women's sport and the strides that it's made in recent years, she was doing it in a level playing field. She wasn't getting any allowance like they did in France for riding against the males. And she was... On one level, she was a reluctant kind of lioness for women in sport. But on the other, I think, like some of the female athletes now that need to monetize, she also used it to make herself somewhat of a marketable brand, as she absolutely should. And she's done probably, I'd imagine, very well out of the game. And I found her tricky enough to interview. You know, I really did. I found her really, like, she was strong. And her interviews were, she wouldn't necessarily give an awful lot away, but she took no prisoners as well. So, you know, it's funny, you might have this idea of, like, oh sure, you're interviewing like a lady rider, that'll be easier. Not at all with Rachel Blackmore. I thought she was, you know yourself when you interview people, like if Roy Keane walked in, I was talking to Colin Healy during the week for a podcast, and Colin Healy has, and even on a Zoom call, Colin Healy has an absolute aura about him, an absolute aura, as does Roy Keane, who we replaced in Saipan memorably. So did Rachel Blackmore.
I don't think Rachel was the biggest fan of giving interviews.
Mm.
And I would have found her a try and interview at times. And that's...
I'm glad you said that then, yeah.
That is completely irrelevant, though, because I think she let her abilities as a jockey do the talking. She didn't want to get involved in the gender discussion. I think there are a few things to say here. I think she saw herself as a woman rider, not as that. I think she saw herself as a rider of horses.
Mm.
And all the stuff that goes with it, the media was, you know what, I just want to ride horses and represent Henry de Bramhead and the owners at race courses. But like there was an Elizabeth Taylor movie called National Velvet, you know, came out decades ago about, you know, the girl trying to win the Grand National. So there is a societal commentary on that, so that she could not avoid, and she probably didn't want to have anything to do with it, and that's only from just observing. But I think what's more important than the 18 Cheltenham winners or winning six races at the 2021 meeting when the whole of the UK contingent only had five, to win the champion hurdle and have that association with Honeysuckle, to win the Gold Cup on a Plutarch, to win the Grand National at other times. Every time I was observing Rachel Blackmore at a race course, I just saw her being so kind to young people looking for selfies and autographs, and she never said no. And boys and girls that go up to her would look for a photo, look for something to be signed, and she was so obliging. And I think that if you ever are a young person and you go, well, you know yourself, John, you meet maybe a sporting hero or somebody you admire, and they give you the time of day and they make you feel special. That to me, more than anything else, is what I remember Rachel Blackmore for as a sports person, that she made young people feel great about the fact that they met their hero in inverted commas, and she lived up to that. And that's for me the legacy I think she'll leave. I think she was so popular among young people, and I hear so many stories of her being so good to young people at race courses and beyond.
100%. And not only young people, like I had a friend in racing who was relaying to me at the time how his mother was unwell. And the little video that she sent her absolutely made her world at the time. But when you talk about the young people, my friend Rico from the States, I don't know if you've met him actually, real character, loves his racing, but he loves coming to Ireland and he loves going racing in Ireland from New York if he comes. And he went up talking to Rachel Blackmore after she'd had one ride in Thurles, I think, which was beaten, and she'd one ride. And he even was commenting on that nature of her operation in the sense that how she spoke to people. I didn't get this until I started working for Racing TV and doing a lot of the run-of-the-mill meetings. I never understood how big, like, I remember being at some of the summer meetings, like the likes of Kilbeggan, Thurles, kind of Ballinrobe, and say like Wexford, and seeing the scrum of people who would want to get a selfie with her or her to sign their race card. And for me, and I'm obviously not around her all the time, but she was unflailingly courteous and always did it. And you remember as a kid, if a top sportsman tells you to F off, like, you will remember that. And bloody hell, you can imagine going up to some of the jockeys and doing the same. And Rachel, for whatever reason, you can imagine the stress she was under at times. Like, I mean, just normal stress, then riding horses, maybe riding a runner up in a day, and just never ending. And that was massive for racing. She did all that. Basically, that was promoting racing for free, as far as she was concerned. But she was just unflappable in that regard. And she, in my view, has done more for racing than any individual in a long time.
So she will want to be remembered for her skills as a rider. Let's pick out three then, because you picked out three rides and I picked out three completely different ones. So Bob Ottinger is your first one, 2025, this year, Chapman Stairs Hurdle.
Yeah, I have to say that the first ride I didn't feel that Rach was having a great season this season, and there have been rumours about her retiring for at least a year, and they were always like, and there's no way I was going to ask her, and I don't know if anyone ever did. I don't know Rachel well enough to even ask her off the record or whatever, but there, for whatever reason, there are rumours was, and then at Punchdown it was like, oh, she's going to retire after she wins such and such, and then that went, came and went. Eventually she did retire, but this year she was, this season she was having a relatively quiet season. I remember being at Clonmel one day, there was sort of a 3-horse race, and I felt she gave a horse like not a great ride, to be fair, by her standards at all. And I was kind of wondering how Cheltenham would go for her, and there was this idea of, will she have all the rides? Darrow Keefe is stepping up for some of the rides. And then she, like, her Cheltenham this year for me was, like, as I said, I don't have this, like, bank of memories of that was incredible from Rachel Blackmore. But the ride on Bob Olinger was absolutely top, top, top class. Because you've seen him, as much as he likes Cheltenham, he's a horse that, you know, has a lot of ability, but is clearly, clearly not straightforward. She was, I think it was Puppy Power representing, Henry de Brom had said to her beforehand, if you get there too late, just don't worry about that. Just get there late, late, late. And she just gave the horse so much confidence. So that was my first one. As much as he was a very good horse, he still had to beat Tiopu, who's an exceptionally good stayer of his time. And we saw that at Punchdown. I thought that was copybook from her. I thought it was as good a ride as she'll ever give a horse.
And then Air of Entitlement in the same colours.
Yeah.
And that horse collared 6.5. So once again, that's a judgment of tractions of pace.
Exactly, exactly. And I spoke to Barry Geraghty about this for a piece I'm doing. And he mentioned this ride as well, specifically for the fact that Keith Donoghue sort of thought, Keith Donoghue did say afterwards, I don't know how I was beat. And obviously 6.5 disappointed at Punchdown. But at the same time, she did everything right that day, and the mare, and Rachel just... I don't think she could have given this, and I don't think anyone could have given Air of Entitlement a better ride than she did.
And then Minetta Times 2021 Grand National during COVID is your final pick.
Yeah, so this was just, it's just a Grand National. And granted, this is, I mean, Rachel has ridden extreme high pressure rides, extreme, where you're riding like Honeysuckle at Even Money in a Champion Hurdle or whatever, and you're riding a lot of fancied horses day in, day out for Henry de Bromhead. Minetta Times, I think, was 11-1. But it was still a copybook ride over the revised National Fences on a horse that wasn't a certainty or anything like that. She was absolutely brilliant on the day. And that day for me, I mean, she was all over the papers, obviously, on the Sunday. And that doesn't matter as much as it did in the days of social media. But again, it was a fantastic ride where she just didn't make mistakes on the big day.
And it should also move the market as well, because you'd be like a Housewives, yeah, and inverted commas favourite.
Exactly.
The people that wouldn't be necessarily invested in racing, the people who would punt once a year on the Grand National. Remember, my sister backed her that day, Minetta Times. I'm picking three different rides, and Minetta Indo in the Aberbartle Novices Hurdle on the last day of 2019. She'd only had one winner at Cheltenham, which was a Plutard earlier in the week, a 50-1 outsider. And the horse was tanking all the way, tanking. And that's going to be a very rough race, a very hard race. But she just trusted the horse, even though he was running too free, and then she was able to go on the inside, get the best trip of ground, and not disappoint the horse to make him win. And it's really interesting, the link between the two, because she never rode Minetta Indo to win at Cheltenham again. She was second the following year in the Novice Chase, beaten collared by Champ, which would probably be a learning experience. And then the following year in the Gold Cup, she rode a Plutar and maybe went too soon, and Minetta Indo under Jack Kennedy enjoyed the battle possibly more and went up the hill ahead of a Plutar. So my second pick then was a Plutar himself then at 2022, because she probably learned not to, a bit like Bob Olinger this year, not to push the button until the very last moment and then hit the button at the right time. Because as Davy Russell would have told me, you only get one go at it. And then when she pushed the button on a Plutar, horse banded clear to win by 15 lengths. That's a huge margin for a Gold Cup winner, any winner at a Gold Cup. And the third horse I picked, or the third ride I picked, was Honeysuckle in the Maris Hurdle in 2023. Like, you got to remember that under rules, Honeysuckle was unbeaten for her first 16 races before then disappointing twice. They said, you know what? She's won three times the Cheltenham, two champions in the Maris. We're going to put her in the Maris race. It's going to be her last race. She's 8 years of age. Love and voix really puts it up to her. And then Rachel's got to dig deep so hard up that hill to galvanise Honeysuckle to win the Mare's Hurdle at her fourth Cheltenham win. But you can only imagine what she was feeling. Surely at one stage during that run up the hill and crossing the line, Jack de Bromhead would have passed her mind, and she would have thought of Jack. And I, having been there the day, it's the most emotional I've ever seen a race course. The rainbow came out. You've Henry and Heather welcoming Rachel back after the tragedy that befell Jack, and Honeysuckle and Rachel were there in symphony. So that was a pressure ride, and one she delivered on.
Beautiful, Jiddy. Yeah, beautiful. The Jack DeBrom stuff, I wasn't there that day, but like I'm getting emotional even thinking about it here. Her relationship with Honeysuckle, and then you add in Jack DeBrom, like the fact that Honeysuckle had such a striking name, you know, Honey and it being a mare, and then you had a woman riding her. She was such a popular horse, and I feel that people loved watching her race. They really did. They loved seeing her go on this unbelievable unbeaten run and then keep going after she was beaten. Like, she could have easily retired unbeaten, like some horses have, and you would have said, oh, she never lost, but she kept going. And I feel Rachel has Henry de Bromhead massively to thank. Like, I've always said, Aidan O'Brien's success has gone hand in hand with Galileo, and Rachel Blackmore's has gone hand in hand with Henry de Bromhead. And it's hugely down to Eddie O'Leary. I mean, and I spoke to him again this morning about, he said, like, basically we opened the door, but she had to, like, when you think of the amount of jockeys who have lost good jobs, like with more talent probably than Rachel Blackmore, but you have to live your life off the track, you have to be good with owners, and ultimately you have to be reliable on the big day, and she was exceptionally reliable on the big day. And I'm glad you said that about the interviews, because I never found it was, she's a bit of a contradiction in that regard, because she's so marketable, but she's just not her thing to be doing interviews.
It's,
really.
I don't think it's anything personal. I hope it isn't. I just think it's just on her back.
Mm.
And then what you see, what we're trying to get, the we want to get it. Let's give us the interview.
Yeah.
But not everybody wants to work that way with you. And you're just thinking, oh, because you're in the limelight, you have an obligation to give us racing folk or sports people. We're the conduit to the public. Well, actually, you know what? I'm going to be the conduit through my riding. And actually, as I said in the kind of the body of this piece, how I treat the public at the race course. Mm. Us clowns don't matter.
Mm. Mm. No, this is send in the clowns. Yeah, unfortunately, you're right, JD. And I don't think she mightn't be giving interviews at the moment. She's letting the dust settle as well. So her next move will be interesting.
Well, she's going to stay in the game. Mm. I mean, she's got the degree. Look, is she going to get involved in training? Is she going to be involved in the media? In, like, sometimes you have sports people who are not interested in the media, but when they get then retired, they do get into the media. But whatever she does is going to be interesting, because she's got a very smart brain and has made a huge imprint on Irish sport and Irish life and what through her achievements.
I did get a great kick out of her one night when we were at the Sugar Club, I think, and she made a point of saying my boyfriend Brian Hayes when she was on about something, and because like my partner Brian Hayes, obviously they've been going out a good while, and I said back, oh, your partner, is it, you're dating? And she started to laugh, and the whole room was in, like, she has that, when Rachel laughs, people were really like all over it. And I remember that was my favourite moment of her. We had a great laugh that night, and the, I think it was Patrick Mullins might have been there as well, and Patrick and Rachel and Brian and maybe somebody else lived together, and they shared a house, and hope herself and Brian have been a couple for a long time, and I'd say he's been a big part of it as well.
Rachel Blackmore, well done. Congratulations on an amazing career and a fantastic legacy in Irish sport and in Irish racing. This is the Racing Pod on Off the Ball. If you're listening to the free version of the podcast, we're leaving you here. If you're looking for more, including our look at Saturday's action at Newbury and Navan and Johnny's charity bet, you can go to offtheball.com/join to subscribe and get the full pod with all of our racing tips, insights and stories from the week's action.
The Racing Pod
on Off the Ball
with William Hill. Who you got? 18 plus. See gamblingcare.ie.
I'm Cindy Lauper with fellow Cosentyx advocate, Chef Michelle Bernstein.
We'll share our experiences with plaque psoriasis, with psoriatic arthritis, and Dr. Panico will talk about the possible connection.
Cosentyx secukinumab is prescribed for adults with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis 300 milligram dose, and adults with active psoriatic arthritis 150 milligram dose. Don't use if you're allergic to Cosentyx. Before starting, get checked for tuberculosis. An increased risk of infections and lowered ability to fight them may occur, like tuberculosis or other serious bacterial, fungal, or viral infections. Some are fatal. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms like fevers, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, had a vaccine or plan to, or if inflammatory bowel disease symptoms develop or worsen. Serious allergic reactions and severe eczema-like skin reactions may occur. Learn more at 1-844-COSENTYX or cosentyx.com/Cindy.